Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Marcellaro. And this week, my guest is the co-founder of the Joy of Tech webcomic, Nitrozack. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
Thank you for being on the show. It's very nice to meet you for the first time and chat. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
You, along with your partner, Snaggy, Mr. Evans, co-founded Geek Culture in 1997. Today we know your work through the Joy of Tech webcomic. And so other than being extraordinarily famous and talented, you are also Canadian.
Yeah, Canadian, eh? Two hearts.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in I was born in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and then my formative years was in northern Manitoba. It's 400 miles north of Winnipeg, which is really far north.
Ice hockey country.
Yeah. And it's a really small town. And that's where I grew up. And then after high school, I majored in
Slow down here. Did you know in high school that you had artistic talent and that you had aspirations to be an artist? Was it happening then?
It was happening at age two. I think even before that. I was, like, as soon as I had some writing, drawing apparatus, like a crayon, I was drawing nonstop since 2 years old. So in high school, it was like, for sure, I knew that I had artistic, talent.
I'm curious, did Mac Paint come into your life at some point? Because that triggered a lot of artists, I know.
Yeah, it did. What was it called? It was Pixel something, I think it was called. It was on the SE. That was my first Apple drawing program that I got addicted to. And before that, Ontario College of Art, I went to the new media department and they had Amigas, and I was exploring drawing and making videos for my digital drawings on those. Those were pretty unsuccessful.
were the Amigas, those were well known for being game machines. Were they particularly strong in doing graphics?
Looking back now, no. So I guess it was like, I just did like room interiors, and I was, it was all about art and creating art. And I was like, why would anyone want to do anything on a computer? So it was like a bad introduction to computer graphics. And then I went on to like photography and painting and drawing and communication design and tinkering with and making electronic art out of making little robots was the thing at Ontario College of Art in those days.
It's a long ways, I think, from Winnipeg to Toronto. What caused that, or what carried you to Toronto?
I was working at a job. It was a 1 hour photo. So it was back in the day when you had film reels, like actual emulsion.
Oh, yeah, the dark ages.
Yeah, darkroom ages. And then the biggest technology leap at that point was you could get your photos developed and have prints in 1 hour. So I was slaving away at doing 1 hour photo technician job, which I got really good at adjusting color, like people's face tones and things like that. So I was really good at it, but it was minimum wage. And I was like, gee, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. So I had aspirations for the big city of Toronto and making it as an artist. And I went over there and got accepted into OCA and never looked back.
So was this about the early age of digital cameras, or was it before that?
It's way before that. Well, not way before that. Yeah, I think Photoshop was invented in 88, but we didn't have Photoshop at OCA. They were a bit slow adopting technology at that point for photography. So it was strictly darkroom and making prints, you know, and with the chemicals and everything, which I'm actually kind of missing that a lot. Like, the digital photography is great, and Instagram and things, and you can put filters on, and people are, the general public are really great photographers compared to back in pre-Instagram days and stuff like that, like the one-hour Photoshop days.
Were you thinking about becoming a commercial artist at this point because of your college experience? Was that something you had your eye on?
Yeah, I definitely wanted to become a commercial artist. And then by the time I graduated, well, about third year in, I wanted to be a real artist with a gallery and everything. And then right after I graduated, 2 years after that or so, I kind of gave up on the idea of being a real artist with galleries and stuff like that. I became a little disillusioned about the gallery and grant getting lifestyle of a so-called real artist.
What was it that disillusioned you? Was it the culture or what?
Well, it was, I hate to say it, but it was really sexist. Yeah, like, you know, it was, people have looked into it, and statistically, they would give art grants to men, not women. Like, there was a real big gap in there, and I don't even know if they've even improved that now. Like, but if you're a woman and trying to make it as an artist, it is really hard.
Do you think the situation is better today in 2017?
I don't think so. No, I don't think it's, because all the big artists like Damien Hirst and the people who make the really big money in art world, it's mostly men. But there are some women who are making, but it's still not the same earning potential as men. So after a while, you just, you know, writing's on the wall, you struggle and struggle, and you just kind of have to make ends meet.
Right, but you figured out how to convert your talent into something else. You told me that in the late 90s, you took a course on how to create CD-ROMs. That, about the time, that was about when the iMac exploded on the scene, the late 90s, and we were all buying interactive CD-ROMs.
Yeah, I was working in the theater. I chose to go into there and working in prop building and costuming and dressing. I think statistically it's an average career in theater productions about 5 years. And like, I lasted about 6 or 7.
Why is that? And
I think you just, well, again, it's the arts. And back then there was a recession. And so the theater budgets were constantly cut, and you would just get jobs. Like, I would get maybe 2 weeks a month of work if I was really lucky. Mm. And so you couldn't really, having a dream of owning a home or something like that was really not achievable.
Were you the person who drew the background art? Like, if there was going to be a little restaurant scene, you're the one who drew the awnings and the windows and the background stuff?
Yeah, I did some scenic painting for the ballet. And mm-hmm. They make it look really realistic. Like, things look weathered and things like that. And there's all like these painting techniques to do that. I mean, I did that. It was really fun.
So it sounds like you were, very talented and highly motivated, but you were kind of like disillusioned, as you said, by the formal art world. So you were working on converting your talent into something productive at this point. Did I understand that right?
Yeah, that's perfect. I heard about this opportunity to take a course about designing interactive CD-ROMs, and I took it and I learned so much. It was a real intense learning experience. And
who did you take the course from? Was it one of these tech conferences where you go pay and attend a tutorial session, like MacTech? Oh,
yeah. I think it was more extensive than that. It was a few months. It was about 4 or 5 months.
Oh.
Every day. It was sponsored through the unemployment program or employment insurance, paid for it. It was a really great deal. And
That must have been expensive. It was nice to have it subsidized.
Yeah, it was completely subsidized. And I graduated from there and went on to found Geek Culture from there and utilized everything I learned. And that was in 96.
So you were, at this point, you had access to tools like Photoshop and Illustrator and editing, yeah, sound editing tools and stuff like that. You could put together a package. Hmm.
Yeah, and even learning how to do project managing and, you know, where you get clients and you manage the whole project. That was really, really good.
Did you try to convert that skill into a job, like, you know, on a resume and find some art agency or ad agency, or... And instead, you decided to go with the Geek Culture thing. Tell me about that.
Okay. The final project was a topic of your choice, and you made your own little CD-ROM of mm-hmm. it. And I was doing a project. I chose the moon, and I was doing all this research on it. And
the Apollo program, you mean, right?
Actually, the whole moon.
Okay.
You know, I was learning the maps of it, and Sea of Tranquility and all the, and the folklore and all the inspirational songs about it and everything. Of course, the Apollo program, that drew me in. And then I realized I was really interested in how the geeks made it possible. If we went to the moon, or, you know, the U.S. went to the moon, and it was all possible because of these genius people, you know, working in the control room. And you always think of the astronauts as being, you know, the heroes of it, but it really is the geeks. And then I thought, well, you know, with computers and technologies, and now the World Wide Web was brand new. And I thought, you know, geeks really need to be, this really need to applaud these people and show the heroes that they are. And they're really special people. And that's when Geek Culture was born.
Cool. Well, I want to follow up on that and ask you some more about that in a minute. But right now, it's time to take a break. Folks, we're going to hear from Kelly, and we'll be back in 60 seconds. Stay with us.
Hello there, all you fabulous background mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage, where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
Thank you, Kelly. We're back. I'm chatting with Liza Schmalzel. You know her as Nitrozak, the cartoonist. So this fascination with geeks turned into your vision for geek culture. How are you making a go of it financially, if I may ask at that point? Because that's kind of a, you know, most people are thinking about, you know, trying to get a 9-to-5 job at this point.
Oh, yeah. and there's nothing wrong with 9-to-5 jobs. Like, I totally think those people are heroes, you know, with that. So, but yeah, it is different. It was back in 97 it was founded. So the World Wide Web was just taking up. So we were working on a Geek Culture's interactive CD-ROM. And I saw that that was becoming obsolete really quickly. And the World Wide Web was taking off. And there are a lot of companies and big corporations, they didn't have websites. And so we had set up Geek Culture, and we immediately set up the online store. And I remember getting our first customer online, and they bought a Kinda Believe t-shirt, and it was a really big deal.
You said we. At this point, I think you had just met Snaggy, Mr. Bruce Evans.
Oh, I met Snaggy at Ontario College of Art.
We missed that part.
Oh, yeah, I met him in second year college, and he was in his last year, I think. And we hit it off, and we were together ever since. And we founded geekculture.com together, and we're working on it as a partnership as well.
How did you come up? Go ahead.
It's okay.
How did you come up with the name Nitrozac and Snaggy? Where did that come from?
I came up with it, like, back in the day, you needed to hide your identity because, like, we were on IRC chat and everything, and we were, you know, attracting a lot of geeks and also a lot of hackers. So you had to, plus it was, you know, you just had to hide your identity. It was the thing to do. And so I came up with Nitrozac. And I thought of it as a really powerful antidepressant.
Oh, sort of like nitro fuel roadsters meets some sort of stimulation. All right. What about Snaggy?
Snaggy, he's, it's not really a secret, but he's a famous songwriter and musician. He has a Cat Carol song recorded by Maren Cadell, and it plays every year on CBC in Canada. It's a really sad little Christmas song, but he's an extremely talented musician and songwriter, and he wrote a song called Snagalina, and it's for sale on iTunes, I think. And he took on that nick, Snaggy, short for Snagina.
Okay, now I understand.
It's a really cute, funny song. I really like it.
So you started a geek culture website with the idea of merchandising and homage to the geeks. And that resulted in this after Y2K thing. Is that about right?
Yeah. We had a store and we had our products, and we were really into like UFOs and aliens and things like that. And we needed traffic to drive the sales and everything like that. And I noticed that there were like we started after Y2K, and it was one of the very first web comics on the internet. There was user friendly and Sluggy. I don't know if you knew him, Sluggy. I realized, people get addicted and they have to come every day to the website, and it became and I was sort of obsessed about the idea of the Y2K bug destroying all the computers and destroying society and what that would do to geeks and all the famous geeks of the day. And that's when I we came up with after Y2K, and it was a little experiment, and then it just really took off and got really popular.
Were you deep into Macintoshes at this point because you used them when you were younger?
Yeah, we were deep into Macintoshes, but the after Y2K took off with the Linux community, and we dabbled in the Linux arts for a bit. We actually had a Linux box, and they had a program called the GIMP.
Oh, yeah, I tried GIMP. That. It's famous. Yeah. My wife uses that, yes.
Oh, really? And, well, it's essential if you want to learn hacking or anything like that, or sysadmin.
Well, it's a great Photoshop things. Substitute. She took a photography class, and they had to process their photos and do things with them and crop them and convert them and change the size. And GIMP is a really nice tool for photographers who want to have a free program. It's on the Mac, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I should try it again. we got well known with them, and then we reused Macs mostly. And Steggy had a Mac SE, and I loved it. And then I got a Power Mac 7200, and then later on I got a Power Mac, a Tower 8600. I don't know if you remember those.
I had an 8500 about that time. I loved it because you could take it apart, open it up. You could put your own memory in. It was really cool. It was really cool. And it had video inputs. So you could, it had RCA video inputs. So you could take a video feed from, say, your VCR or your TV, pump it into the back, and then there was this video app, and you could like watch TV on your computer. It was awesome.
Oh, it's fantastic. And then later on, the iBooks came out, and I was like whining, I want an iBook, like to my family and everything. I really want an iBook. I really need a Blueberry. I'm like, and they got me one for Christmas that year, and it was like my treasured possession.
Oh, was this the famous toilet seat Blueberry iBook?
I know, but it was really like,
I had one of those.
Amazing. Yeah. You know, I'd carry it around and people would go, wow, what did you have? You
did,
know,
didn't it have a handle, as I recall?
Oh, it had a handle. Yeah, didn't have to get a case or anything. You could just show everybody what you got. And people just loved it. Like, you know, it was a fantastic like icebreaker.
So was the merchandising at this point paying the light bill and the rent?
Yeah, but we did pretty good. We got really good ad money. We did got good ad merchandising sales. We sell propeller beanies, and Fair Isaac would get a whole bunch of propeller beanies for their trade shows, and so we did a lot of like bulk orders for companies. This is before Google was even thought of, I think. So that was, and we still sell propeller beanies, of course. I think we're the largest purveyor of propeller beanies in all of Canada.
That is good to know. Good to know. Then you also made money by licensing out the Joy of Tech cartoon, right?
Yeah, we license to anywhere in the world, and we've licensed most notably to Wall Street Journal, All Things D with Kara Swisher and Walt Mossberg. Mm-hmm. And then later on, when they moved on to Recode, we licensed comics to them. And Bloomberg Business Week carried our comic in their technology section. And Mashable and the Wall Street Journal of China licensed our comic, you know, and it was translated into Chinese.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah.
And in Brazil and Germany and worldwide, we've been everywhere, and textbooks and conferences. A lot of people like to give talks, and our comics illustrate the topics really well.
When did you start creating portraits of people? I've looked at your portraits on the website, and they're awesome.
Oh, thank you. I've done over 1,000 of them already. And
for pay, right?
Oh, yeah, for pay.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, for pay. And sometimes, you know, I'll do a little freebie here and there. Most notably for Recode in 2014, I did the portraits for all of them. And I wound up doing portraits of like Gwyneth Paltrow and Ryan Seacrest
Kim
Kardashian. And I have photos of like Gwyneth Paltrow in front of the portrait I did of her. And I have that on my Twitter header. And it's like,
oh, nice.
Yeah. It's like, oh.
What's the thinking behind these portraits in the internet age where we're all into, you know, images and photography and photos and social media? What's the thinking behind portraits? Is it can't just be for Twitter avatars, right? It's got to be something else.
Yeah, people have them for printouts and they buy them for other people. As a gift, and it's a real artist. I think it's an artistic kind of thing.
Oh, so they're kind of artistic themselves, and they fancy having an artistic portrait of themselves as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I do the portraits really as flattering as possible. So every portrait will have beautiful, clear skin and white teeth and. Maybe a little nip and tuck, I don't know, but you know, I make them as flattering as possible, and every hair is in place. And you could never get a photograph like that. I mean, you know,
yeah, that's true. I saw your portrait of Dr. Kiki Sanford. It's awesome.
Oh, she was.
Did you get a chance to listen to the show I had with her?
Yes, I did. She's great.
She's amazing.
Like, she's so brainy and so beautiful. It's just, you know. Very inspiring.
She's getting to be a regular. I think I'm going to invite her back.
Oh, that'd be great.
So photos of you are kind of hard to come by, and we talked before the show about how that's sort of the mystique of Nitrozac and your branding, which carries forward even now. So I'll look for a portrait of you.
Okay. After Y2K, I kind of had a thing about hiding my face, and then I would just reveal a little bit of my eyes, and then it was just a real kind of teasy thing. It was sort of funny, and then it just sort of it kind of kept on, and I don't like there's very few pictures of me on the web, and it's I kind of don't mind, you know. It's sort of with Facebook and Twitter and the social media, like I kind of like it not having my picture around. It's pretty rare.
Yeah, it is. It's unusual, and it does create a sense of mystique and branding. I think it's cool. Are you facing a lot of competition nowadays, or are you still kind of like the big group on campus here when it comes to technical cartoons and so on?
I think we're the top tech comic out there, and we keep as topical as possible. Right now, ransomware comics are really popular.
I was going to ask you what the most popular ones are. There you go.
And like ransomware a couple years ago, things like that, it was really obscure and people kind of wouldn't really get it or anything. But now it's really like the general population might even know what ransomware is.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw a book. I'm not sure, but I think I saw a book the other day. It might have been on Amazon called Ransomware for Techies or something. It was sort of a layman's guide.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So do you get a lot of contract because of your fame? Do you get a lot of contract work that just comes out of the blue? Like, you know, custom artwork or portraits or other work where people just know, hey, these are the people to go to, and then just call you up and say, oh, we got a job for you.
Yeah, we get a lot of that, and that's greatly appreciated. Sometimes I do paintings with technology themes, like the Apple logo, and I think I've done Apple logo theme paintings like every way possible. If the person will win the painting, and then when you offer it to the second bidder, if they'd like a similar painting, you know, they can have that too. So, and then that's considered a commissioned work. And then sometimes out of the blue, you know, sometimes people want a painting that like looks like this, and I'll do that. The comics and stuff like that, we get sometimes we get custom comic proposals, but those are kind of a little bit rare. Once we did
corporate cartoons and corporate materials.
Yeah, a couple years ago, so we got one of those from Microsoft, and they were doing an ad, and they wanted to run a comic, and we did one for them, but then they didn't run the ad. So, but they paid and everything.
Oh,
so,
well, that's the most important part.
Yeah, they're really great clients, and but I'm sort of sad they didn't run the ad.
What kind of computer do you use today? Do you have a big, beautiful iMac? Photoshop.
A gorgeous iMac. It's the biggest screen, and got it a couple years ago, and it's, we watch movies on it, and I do all my artwork on it, and it's just, I can't say enough great things about having an iMac. It's like there's no CPU to plug in the monitor and all that. It's just, it's all in there. I don't know how they do it.
It's a gorgeous display. It is. It's thin and it's beautiful, and it's 27-inch of beautifulness. Yes, yes.
Oh, and if you ever go to like a public library and you have to use their computer, and they have like you go to use the mouse, and they have like a scroll wheel, and it's like, you know, clacking, like you just run home to your iMac. Oh.
So you use a magic mouse, I take it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know how people use those other ones. They really don't.
Well, I'll tell you my story about that. I found that with the magic mouse, my finger tended to touch the surface in the wrong way at the wrong times. And things would happen that I didn't want. And so I switched over to this Logitech mouse that I have, where it's one-dimensional. So the screen only scrolls when I touch it the way it's supposed to be scrolled. So I guess there's different mice for different people. But I do use a magic mouse on other occasions on my MacBook as a side mouse. So, you know, I use them all. Well, yeah. We're kind of running out of time. It's been great talking with you. I want to ask you one more question. So do you see something on the horizon that you can tell us about? Another Joy of Tech book, maybe, or some project?
We are going to work on another Joy of Tech book, and that'll be crowdsourced, crowdfunded, Kickstarter or Indiegogo. We'll be launching that soon. And we are on Patreon. And
Tell me about Patreon. For those people who don't know what that is, give me a brief intro.
Patreon is where you can, it's a crowdfunded resource, and users and fans can go onto there and donate as little as $1 a month, and it all accumulates. So lots of artists and cartoonists are on Patreon, and it's a really great way to get funding and continue on with the arts. And if it weren't for Patreon, we wouldn't have lasted the last couple of years. So we really appreciate it. And as long as there's Patreon patrons, we'll carry on.
Excellent. I will put a link to Patreon on your page in the show notes for this episode.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's great. I can't say enough great things about it.
All right, well, we're going to have to wrap it up. It's been great chatting with you and meeting you for the first time. This has been a real pleasure.
Oh, it's been really fun. Thank you.
Tell the listeners how they can contact you if they wish.
You can reach me on Twitter, at NitroZack. And
of course. What else?
I'm not on Facebook. I have a fan page, but I don't like Facebook. So it's like, no. But so Twitter, me and Donald Trump, you know, we like Twitter.
All right. Well, again, thank you very much for being my guest on the show. It was a pleasure.
Okay, thank you very much.
Folks, we hope you enjoyed this show with Nitrozac. We'll see you next week on the Mac Observer's Background Mode.